Chapter 24. The planet itself could not withstand the cataclysmic energy unleashed in Varen's inhuman cry. Elith felt herself lifted as the ground beneath her ripped from its moorings, assaulting her with a jagged spray of rock and ice that tore her face and hands. Her eyes flew open as the earth broke and tumbled away. The sky swirled above a shattered horizon. Gravity fought centrifugal force over her body and limbs, each striving to rip away the greatest share. She was airborne, riding a wave of invisible power. She realized it an instant before she impacted, and the cosmic veil tore before her eyes. Gone was Quell's shadow, replaced by an infinite expanse laid open. It beckoned her to the place she had visited through the deep language, the place she had fought to resist each time it had called her to release herself to its depthless pool. Elith had no strength to resist now, nor any need. Her work was done. Her final thought was of the Paragon, her once illumined mother, and whether the ancient matriarch of the first house would feel sorrow over Elith's sacrifice, or only relief. Regret, perhaps, once Elith's final act manifested, and she at last understood how Elith had once again made a way where no other could. At that, Elith released herself, felt the cool embrace of death close around her. She found it had an unexpected sweet aroma, like fresh earth after a spring rain, and within it lay the settled peace of a quiet stream beneath a star-kissed sky. The weighted darkness pressed upon her, so tangible she could nearly feel it in the palm of her hand. She grasped it, felt its texture, damp and sponged, and realized that somehow her breath persisted. Though she knew it would be impossible, she tried to raise her head, only to discover it was not impossible after all. Darkness receded. Her vision returned, clouded. She was lying amid a deep pile of loose, soft earth, and she became aware of her tightly clenched left hand. When she relaxed her grip, she discovered there a small mound of the soil, marked by the strength of her touch. She turned her hand, let the earth rain from her palm. If only she'd had one of her vials to store it in. In the distance, she heard the howl of a wild animal, melancholy, lonely. It wasn't until a gentle wave of power washed over her that she realized it was no animal she heard. Varen still raged. Elith struggled to sit up, feeling every muscle and bone in her body as they strove to remember their roles and how to work together. She went to raise her right hand to wipe the dirt from her face and cried out at the lightning pain that struck her. The dislocated shoulder became a focal point of her body's diffused hurts. Its sharpness made the rest dull and thus manageable, and she found strength enough to clamber her way up to her feet. With her left hand, she gently cleared the dirt and dust-infused tears from her eyes. Once she'd restored her vision, she still wasn't sure she was seeing clearly. Varen stood some 40 yards away in the middle of a shallow crater, his back to her, and looking out over a landscape transformed. At first, she thought he must have wandered away after striking her down, and was now wrecking the land in violent lament. But then she realized that he was still in the same place, and that she was the one who had moved. His intended killing blow had thrown her an incredible distance. How she'd survived it was beyond her. On the opposite side of him, the land had changed so much that it was difficult to tell he was standing right where she'd knelt in front of him, awaiting death. A savage rift had opened almost at his feet, narrow at its origin, but widening as it stretched away from him, and continuing to do so all the way, it seemed, to the horizon. Elith couldn't judge its depth, From where she stood, it appeared that it could have been down to the very core of Quell's shadow. She recalled the hole he'd opened in Quell to swallow a unit of troopers sent to capture them, and two, the channel he'd cleaved in the Titanic storm here on its shadow. The canyon he'd carved seemed a combination of the two and dwarfed both. He continued to howl, wordless, mindless rage and grief pouring out from him, rippling energy across the surface of the planet and causing the unstable edges of the chasm to shudder and crumble. Elith stood stunned for a time, witnessing the overwhelming ferocity of a soul gone supernova. But when he finally fell to his knees and quieted, she felt stirred to action. She crossed the distance to him, uncertain of what that action would be. Varen's head was tipped forward, a man filled with despair and too spent to release any more. He seemed so crushed beneath the weight of sorrow that even knowing he'd just tried to annihilate her, Elith couldn't help but feel pity prick her heart. She crept forward, careful in her trembling steps to avoid revealing that she'd survived. At the lip of the shallow crater, she stopped and stood watching him, wondering what she should do. Call his name? Invoke the deep language upon him? Sprint forward and smash in his skull with a rock? There were plenty of good ones at her feet, churned up by his devastation.
Elith,
he said, sending a cold shock through her. He'd given no sign that he'd heard her approach. His voice betrayed no surprise at her presence.
I can't.
She didn't know what he meant or how to respond. She glanced down at a rock, bent, and quietly picked it up, just in case. Varen raised his head, gazed out over the rift he'd torn in the planet's surface, or perhaps gazed into it. After a few moments, he picked up a rock the size of a small apple and slung it into the chasm. All the energy had left him. The awful presence had lifted, and he seemed so small and broken. It was difficult to believe he'd ever presented any sort of threat.
I can't, he repeated.
Sure looks like you did, she answered. He let out a punctuated breath, the ghost of a sad chuckle, and then turned his head, not far enough to look at her, but enough to speak over his shoulder.
I'm glad you're okay, he said.
Elith imagined the rock sailing from her hand and dashing his skull in.
I needed to move you, he said. I just pushed a little harder than I meant to.
When you killed me?
I wasn't trying to kill you, Elith. That might be hard to believe, I guess.
Good guess, especially since you actually told me that's what you were going to do right before you did it.
I know. But you were sitting right there, he said, and then flicked a hand at the ruin in front of him. If I'd meant to kill you, do you think I would have missed this badly?
You want the honest answer?
Not really.
Are you going to put the rock down?
Not yet.
He nodded and returned to looking over his handiwork.
I didn't know I was going to do all this, he said. I wonder if you'd be able to see it from space.
Varen?
Yes.
Are you Varen?
Him and him alone. Or you can call me Grief if you like. Before you smash my head in, I mean. Or while doing it, if that's your preference.
She stepped down into the crater, crossed its soft surface. A cold unease rose in her, as though she were walking on an immense, recently filled grave. He didn't turn at her approach, and she stopped a few feet behind him and off to his left. Where's your friend? She asked. He raised his hand, waggled it at the chasm.
Gone for good?
Varen shrugged.
That's not encouraging. Neither is sitting here having to live with myself.
Might not have to for much longer.
It would be justice served, he said, but far too small a sliver. And I fear I don't have a sufficient number of lives to pay the full debt.
All this time,
You've been working to let Quell's shadow in, Elith said, wary. And then you turn around and throw it off that quick? That easy?
Time doesn't mean what you think it does, Elith,
Varen answered, then pointed at the new canyon.
And you think that was easy?
No, I think that was an accident.
Yeah, well, still took a lot out of me. And you know what you did. What you did to force me back.
I didn't force anything, Elith said, and I didn't expect it to have an effect that soon.
Quick learner, he said. I guess it's possible I had a choice. Maybe I could have done it. Could have, you know, followed through, taken that path. But if I did, it didn't seem like it in the moment.
You love to talk about destiny, and never about your responsibility to it. Varen closed his eyes for a moment, then ran a hand over his face before he responded.
Do you know what the odds are that when I first started this journey, I should happen to uncover the bits of the deep language that I did, in the order that I did, at the time that I did? I'd guess slim. The Arbiter calculated it for me once. Instead of an answer, he just told me there aren't enough zeros in the universe to account for it. Change any one of those by even the slightest amount, and I would have destroyed only myself, instead of seven worlds. And yet, your words were under your power to control at every point along the way.
So it would seem. He went quiet for a span, but when he spoke again, he raised his hands above his shoulders, just high enough for her to see. Elith saw he was trembling.
These hands wrought something horrific. Something so hideously abhorrent that I think there is not a word even in our great language that can fully capture its scale. And it is a thorn in my heart, Elith, buried deep, deep within it. I have spent lifetimes trying to remove it.
Varen dropped his hands into his lap again, shook his head.
I tried with Quell, he said. I wanted to try again with its shadow. Desperately, fiercely wanted to try again. I still want to.
He sank into himself at those words, eyes focused on the ground ahead of him, but seeing only something within himself.
Then what did you see in yourself that made you stop? Elith asked.
At the sound of her voice, he blinked a few times and then answered,
It wasn't in me, Elith. It was in you. I saw the same thorn in your heart. But I saw, too, what you have learned that I have not.
Elith couldn't follow what he was saying, what he thought he'd seen in her that could have had such a profound effect upon him.
And what was that? Simply, that it cannot be removed, he responded.
For the first time since she'd walked up behind him, he turned to look at her fully.
You carry the same burden. For different reasons, I know, and for reasons that may even be just. But it's the same.
There was no doubt as to which burden he meant. Even at the mention of it, she felt the familiar wave begin to rise within her. It recalled to her the many worlds that had died by her hand. But now it recalled to her, too, what Varen had said when the shadow had destroyed Quell, how he wouldn't grieve a thing only temporarily lost. And she realized how that statement had merely been a shadow and an echo of the one he'd crafted and clung to in his search for his way back home.
Seeing it in you made it somehow more real in me, he continued, turning his face once more toward the chasm, and I was wrong to believe only I carried it.
Elith watched him, evaluated him. He did seem like himself again, but the change had been so sudden it was difficult to trust. I'd like to believe you, but I'm still not sure whether you were using Quell's shadow or it was using you.
I'm not sure it matters. We were after the same goal in a way, trying to preserve it. I don't know why it needed you for that. You're still standing, aren't you? He said, and I don't think it was quite prepared for things like us to be walking around on it. Things so small, but so resilient. And what about you?
I need to be sure you don't need it anymore. Can any of us be sure of anything, Eleth? She threw the rock. It smacked the ground right next to him, so close it made him jump. Nice throw, he said, looking down at it. I meant to hit you, she replied. Do I need to pick up another one? He shook his head. I won't deny the temptation, Eleth, even now. There is power there, such power, that could be harnessed, mysteries that call to be unraveled. And I had hoped that by unraveling them, I might find a different answer there. But I know I won't. I think maybe I've known it for a long time. There is no... he started, but the words caught in his throat. Even now, he could barely bring himself to speak them. There is no reality in which I will be able to correct what I've done. I know that. I'm just afraid of what it might mean if I allow myself to believe it. In his confession, Eleth heard both the fullness of his pain and his reluctance to approach it, and she got the sense that he was still teetering, dangerously close to tipping into some other place. She didn't know what that place might be, but glancing at the rift he'd torn in the world, she didn't want to find out. You're right, Grief. It is the same burden I carry, and will always carry, Eleth said. But it is not one I have ever had to carry alone. Varen took a deep breath and exhaled, and then did so again several times in a row, and she realized how close to the edge he was, how fragile the moment. She reached up and touched her collar, switching on her comms to call back to base camp. Karush, she said. Karush, I need you to bring Yedda and the Paragon out here. Right now. The three women knelt in a circle around Varen, each with a hand on his shoulder. Karush had reset Eleth's arm in its socket, and she hoped the lingering pain wouldn't distract her from the task at hand. She still wasn't confident that the attempt was truly wise. Normally, the technique required 6 advocates of the voice, and as far as she knew, it had never been performed on anyone outside the house. But then, wise or not, the Paragon had agreed to it, and they really didn't seem to have any other options. After a successful operation to put a corrupted planet down, the advocate who had carried out the sentence underwent an extensive recovery protocol. Dividing the river was used during the period of healing, and through it, the small cadre entered into the returning advocate's experience, each taking on a share of the negative impacts of so intense and consequential an event. Though the fragments of experience were imperfect, they made known the inexpressible and bound the group together to ease the terrible sense of isolation that inevitably accompanied the aftermath of the advocate's grave duty. The Paragon looked to Nieta, then to Eleth, and with a nod, signaled the beginning. Together, the three women spoke in the deep language. A torrent cascades. Through many streams it quiets. The response was immediate and excruciating, as though liquid fire had coursed through Eleth's hands into the veins of her arm and throughout her body. But even before she could react, the physical pain vanished, replaced by a whirlwind blast of image and emotion as the technique took hold and drew out fractured memories too often relived. The visions came too fast to retain, and Eleth had only impressions and sensations, the nameless panic of a small child lost in a crowd, the paralyzing shock of a sudden betrayal, the helpless longing unleashed by the image of a loved one taken too soon. None of the feelings came attached to specific events, or rather were all part of the same event, rehearsed countless times, and the weight of Varen's great burden made itself fully known, pressing down upon her, threatening to crush the breath from her lungs. Never before had Eleth experienced so vast a range of such acute sensations. The flood overwhelmed her, overran her ability to process, rendered her incapable of doing anything more than squeezing her eyes so tightly shut that she thought they would burst. The darkest aspects of Varen's life poured into her, with immolating intensity, and within them she felt the lingering influence of Quell's shadow. Indeed, it was part of him now, its tendrils intertwined with vivid experience. Beyond the violent surge of memory and emotion, Elith heard a voice speak, sharp, commanding, and a moment later, the searing stream dissipated like mist under a swift sunrise. Once more, they were just three women in an open, devastated glade. The Paragon was standing now, her hand atop Varen's head. The old matriarch was dressed in a plain service uniform, brown, unremarkable. Even so, she radiated authority and splendor of a measure that would shame all but perhaps the Hezra Ka. And Elith understood then that whatever she herself had suffered under Varen's pain, the Paragon had borne the greatest share and had commanded it.
"I believe that's enough for now," the Paragon said.
She lifted her hand from his head and motioned for Nyeta and Elith to rise. As they did, the two women exchanged a look. Elith saw that Nyeta had endured the same trial.
"For now?" Varen asked. "It will be a good long while yet before you notice any change," the Paragon answered. "Wounds that deep take a great deal of time to heal, even after you stop reopening them."
Outwardly, nothing about him had changed that Elith could see, but she could sense the shift in his energy, though the power remained in him. It had lost some of its wild edge. Not that he was at peace exactly. It just seemed far less likely now that his potential would manifest in its most destructive forms. And Elith felt that perhaps for the first time she was finally getting a glimpse of who Varen was as his truest self.
"I see," Varen said. "Forgive me, this is embarrassing to ask, but was I supposed to feel anything?"
"Grateful, at least," the Paragon replied, "to have been honored to partake in so sacred and secret a ritual? To be alive. Were I in Elith's place, I would have smashed your head in with the rock."
Varen got up from the ground and looked at Elith.
"I see where you get your quick tongue from."
Elith glanced at the Paragon. "I didn't smash his head because I thought he might be useful," she said. And then she looked back at Varen. "Now, I'm not so sure."
"We have time, and plenty of rocks," he offered. "But if you're going to do it, you should probably do it soon."
"Yeah, why's that?"
"Because Quell's shadow still has many ways to hurt us," he answered, "and I was the only thing holding it back."
The seven of them stood gathered in Oyun's research station, six of them watching as the Arbiter flipped through a dozen or more displays, looking for the relevant ones. Apparently, he'd been struck by a notion while Elith had been away and had relocated to his main work area in hope of working it out. On their return, it had taken a great deal of convincing by Elith before Karush or Ames had agreed to let Varen anywhere near the camp. When the knocking sounds started up again, though, the conversation had ended quickly. Now, Varen wisely kept himself small, seated on a stool in the corner farthest from the door. Elith stood near Oyun, hoping to catch a glimpse of whatever he'd found, or at least hurry him along in his search, while trying to ignore the throbbing in her shoulder. Outside, the knocking continued, and it seemed new sources sprung up every minute or two. However many were out there, they hadn't yet fallen into sync. Together, they produced a short, strange pattern, like the random scatter of raindrops on a hard surface, recorded and played back in an endless loop. Over time, it did seem to Elith to have shifted, with one single stroke falling more strongly than all the others. The convergence point, she assumed, emerging gradually from the chaos. She didn't want to think what else might emerge from the planet, once the sounds had aligned and then stopped. After what seemed like an eternity, Oyun finally stopped cycling through displays and closed most of them, leaving only four open, which he'd arranged in a square in front of him. He stared at them, eyes rapidly shifting back and forth as he tried to retrieve from his mind whatever it was he was looking for.
"Someone," he said abruptly, without looking away from the displays, "at some point said something about, what was it? The systems, or capabilities. Yes, capabilities, I think it was."
He trailed off, apparently oblivious to anyone else in the room. About 15 seconds later, it was clear he was not.
"Well," he barked,
firing a glare off at the middle of the room, but hitting no one in particular before he turned back.
"What was it? What about the capabilities?"
The group stood in startled silence for a moment, trying to figure out what exactly he was asking.
"That they can be disrupted?" Nieta offered.
Oyun waved his hand and shook his head, his brow furrowed. Elith saw the intensity on his face, the frustration that something useful was just beyond his grasp. And though she didn't know what he was reaching for, she replayed as much of the conversation from the Paragon's isolation room in her head as she could recall, parsing the words that might have caught in his subconscious. Moments later, one leaped forward.
"Overridden?" she said.
Oyun's head snapped around, his eyes finding hers immediately.
"Overridden,"
he repeated, and then he plunged back into his collection of displays, quickly rearranging them, which made no difference that Elith could see. "Overridden made me think of hijacked, and hijacked made me think." He swiveled around to face them all, but he focused on the three women.
"You were all here when we jumped across the galaxy. You, great Paragon, you must have experienced its mechanism at work."
"Yes," she answered.
"Did you ever try to move it yourself?"
The Paragon's eyes narrowed as she shook her head.
"Good," Oyun replied. "You recall the work we did that allowed us to pinpoint the location of the Paragon?"
"The work you did, yes," Elith answered.
"Obviously, I was incorrect about it being a power source," he said, and then winked at Elith. "As I said, wrong, but useful. I built it on a foundation of computations from the deep rather, from my previous research. What made it useful, though, was its combination with the analysis that our two advocates provided. My hope is that between the Paragon's familiarity with Quell's shadow and my work on certain projects, we can override its method of transport to send it away."
"Away where?" Nieta asked.
"Somewhere beyond the barrier, of course."
"Of course," Nieta parroted. The tone should have made it clear to the Arbiter that no one else knew what he was thinking, but he didn't notice.
"Look," Captain Ames said, "I know I'm the dumb one and all, but I can't possibly be the only person here who doesn't understand what the Arbiter's talking about. Can I?"
He glanced around the room for some support.
"What is it you don't understand?"
Oyun asked.
"I mean, pretty much everything that's happened since I got hooked up with you, but what I've put together so far,"
Ames said, and he held up his fingers as he counted. "One, something or somebody put up a fence around our galaxy.
Two, this rock we're on isn't a planet. Three, whatever Varen and Elith did on Quell punched a hole in the fence. That part, right?"
"Roughly speaking, yes," the Arbiter said. "And now you're going to use fancy math and spooky word stuff to hijack a world and pop it back out of our galaxy?
See, you understand just fine."
"I don't even understand what I just said, Arbiter. But when you say send it away, you do mean we're not going with it, right?"
"That would be the intention, yes, Captain,"
Oyun answered, swiveling back around to face his workstation again.
"Or at least not all of us. But let's focus on solving one problem at a time. The trouble is we'll need strong anchors to serve as both an origin and a destination. I could perhaps rig up something to give us what we would need to use Avamar as an origin. It's gathering sufficient data to formulate a destination that I haven't cracked yet."
"What do you mean, not all of us?" Ames asked.
"You need a destination?"
Varen asked from his corner. The Arbiter glanced over at him.
"Yes," Oyun said.
Varen smiled.
I can take care of that.
Abita, Ames said louder. What do you mean? Not all of us.
Oyun ignored Ames, too intent on Varen's words.
By what means?
Quell's out there. I can feel it. I can still feel it just as strongly as when I was walking in its mountains and sitting in the warmth of its sun. It's a long, long way from us,
Varen answered, pausing just long enough to catch Elith's eye.
But that's only a problem if you still think concepts like distance have meaning. He looked back to Oyun and added, there is one problem, though.
Only one?
Varen nodded. I don't think I can do it alone.
He was careful to keep his eyes on the Arbiter, but there was no doubt to anyone in the room what he was saying. Since she'd arrived on Quell's shadow, Elith had imagined many different outcomes at many different times. But through all they'd experienced, never once had it entered her mind that she would remain on the false planet's surface while it sped away to some distant galaxy. Nor, for that matter, that she would play any role in piloting it there. There may technically have been a choice for her to make, but like Varen before her, in that moment, it didn't seem like she had one.
That's all right, she said. I didn't have anywhere else to be anyway.
Whoa, hold up now, Ames said. Oyun, you said send, not pilot.
I brought it here, Varen said. It's right that I should return it to its proper place.
We brought it here, Elith said, when we resisted the contingency.
We're not leaving you two here, Ames said. Abita, we're not just leaving them, right?
If there were any other way, we most certainly wouldn't, Captain, Oyun replied. If there were any other way.
Well, there's got to be some other way.
It's okay, Captain Ames, Elith said. Varen and I have done this sort of thing before.
Listen, Karush said, interrupting.
Everyone turned to look at him, expecting to hear what he had to say. But he only held up a finger, pointing toward the door. Outside, the dreadful rattle of knocks had unified into a single, rhythmic pulse. Ames was the first to move to the door, but once he opened it, the others followed after. None of them went very far. What appeared to be a single, nearly black cloud the size of the sky itself spiraled above them with terrifying speed, but despite its movement, the air at ground level stood still as a grave, and as though it had been waiting for them to step outside, the thrumming of the planet ceased.
I'm too late, Oyun said. I won't have time to run the calculations for Avamar.
Oh, don't worry, Arbiter, Varen replied. I can still do it.
The others all looked to him.
Least I can do after all the trouble I've been, he said. Still going to need some help, though.
Elith nodded.
The rest of you better get to the shuttle, she said.
As she spoke, the wind began to stir. And if you want to have any hope of getting off this planet, you've got to go right now. None of you want to get stuck here while we do this.
Varen looked to her and smiled.
Not we, he said, or at least not you.
She glanced at him, certain she'd misheard him. I'm sorry?
What?
He didn't repeat himself, just tipped his head at the Paragon, who stood a few feet away talking quietly with Nieta. She walked over and joined him. They had clearly discussed some matter beforehand.
Paragon? Elith said.
You were never as deep into the shadow as either of us, the Paragon answered.
And as the Arbiter said, Varen added, we need a destination and an origin.
What are you talking about? I'm going to need you to give us a little push.
What?
No,
Elith said, shaking her head as it finally dawned on her what they were saying. Paragon, you're barely standing as it is. I'm more than capable of taking this on.
You are more than capable of many things, the Paragon said, which is why you must remain within reach of the Ascendance.
But what about the house? You can't just abandon it.
My time there is done, and it will continue on quite well without me,
It will find its new paragon, just as it always has when the seasons change.
The wind continued to gather strength at an alarming pace. The already low temperature seemed to drop another 10 degrees in an instant.
"This won't work," Elith said. "It is utter foolishness for you to stay."
"You are aware, I hope," the Paragon said, and her voice rang with power and authority, "that outside the first house, I am known as the Seat of Wisdom." She paused just a moment before adding, "And wisdom is proved right by her actions." A sharp-edged growl sounded from behind Elith, the shuttle engine spinning up.
"Illumined Mother!"
"Come now. A day ago, I was as good as dead. You should celebrate the fact that this old body has strength enough yet to be of such use." Without any explanation, the Paragon removed her brown uniform jacket, under which she wore only a short-sleeved shirt, exposing her frail arms to the vicious cold. She stepped close to Elith and uttered a phrase in the deep language that Elith had never heard before. "Void without limit, voice without sound, strength within stillness, heavens unbound." As the final syllable left the Paragon's lips, silver fire streaked bright in intricate designs from the backs of her hands, up her arms, across her shoulders, along her neck, and framed her face with lines too fine and delicate to have been etched by any craft other than the calligraphic imprinting of the first house. The brightness of them shone through her thin shirt, and even Varen was taken aback by their sudden appearance, though he had once witnessed Elith perform the same unveiling. Within those markings were written her history, and standing within the house, why she had chosen to reveal them here and now escaped Elith's understanding. The Paragon's purpose became clear a moment later, when she grasped Elith by the shoulders firmly and fixed her with a piercing gaze.
"I am Shelley Orinel," she said, speaking her own hidden name. "Watcher, over hand, eye, voice, and mind, Seat of Wisdom, 88th Paragon of the First House of the Ascendants, by my hand and will, you stand anointed."
The Paragon leaned forward and breathed on Elith, and in so doing completed a ritual that Elith had only read about in the great library of the First House. It did not reinstate Elith's former position as an advocate of the voice, but it did mark her as a trusted ally of the house, as one who could call upon it in time of need. Elith trembled at the magnitude and shock of the moment. The Paragon released Elith's shoulders and donned her jacket. As she did so, the designs faded until no trace remained.
"Elith, Kiri—"
the Paragon said, beginning to address Elith by her former hidden name, before catching herself. And though she was under no obligation to do so, she instead spoke Elith's chosen name.
"Elith Anuel."
"Yes, Illumined Mother."
"Do be a dear, and see that someone with a keen eye and a quick hand looks after my garden."
With that, she moved some distance away, leaving Elith alone with Varen.
"I'm not sure what to make of that," he said.
Elith shook her head, too dazed by the convergence of events to explain. She could never have anticipated any of this, and it was all happening too fast.
"I should go," Varen said, "and so should you."
She blinked at him, trying to regain her footing in the moment.
"Don't worry, it'll be okay. I'm kind of excited to be one of the first humans outside our galaxy," he said. "I feel good about it. I think it's going to be fun."
"This isn't the time."
"Probably not. Still, isn't it funny that a thing meant to be an attack against us should turn out to be the very thing we needed to move forward?" he said,
and he mimicked a pose from Elith's moving meditation routine, one he had demonstrated before. Watcher greets the storm. One never knows what our abundant universe might provide if only we're willing to receive it.
Grief, I can't. I told you I didn't want to lose you to this place. And you said yourself, if we ever found our way back together, you wouldn't let anything separate us again. Not after last time.
Well, yes, but last time there was a choice, he said. This time there isn't.
He took her hand between both of his, clasped it tightly.
Come find me.
I don't know the way.
That's all right, he said, flashing his grin. Just make your own.
He looked into her eyes for a moment longer, then pulled away from her, turned his back, and began walking swiftly toward the Paragon, awaiting him some yards distant. Elith watched him go, watched him while her mind raced to find the words that would call him back, that would be enough to convince him to find another way, that would finally break open the wall she'd built and let free the heart she had for him. But language failed her there. The words all escaped her, all betrayed and fled from her. And as the wind built into a rage around her, she realized it was already too late. Varen and the Paragon were walking together now, walking into the coming storm, and she would not see them again.
Elith!
Karush called over the sound of the engines and the rising wind. She heard his call and knew what it meant, but could not find it in herself to move. Would not allow it, until she had firmly secured in her mind every detail of that final vision of the woman who had most shaped her and the man whom she most loved.
Elith,
Karush repeated, closer now and gentle, and she felt his hand on her arm. And though she was still reluctant to turn, she allowed the Azirim to lead her back to the shuttle and to her seat. It wasn't until the hatch had closed and the ship had begun its climb that Elith realized she was clutching something in her hand, in the hand that Varen had held. She opened it, and when she saw what he had placed there, tears stung her eyes. It was a small vial, filled with the last of Quell's soil that remained in the galaxy. But she felt for the first time, perhaps not in the universe. Elith had no memory of the flight from Quell's shadow, of passing through its bleak and blackened sky and into the open space beyond. How long she sat lost in her thoughts, she didn't know. After she'd found the vial, her next moment of awareness came when Nieta knelt beside her and touched her arm. Elith looked at her, and it took a few seconds for recognition to come.
Nieta, she said.
We've passed the gravitational threshold, Nieta said. We're clear. Elith nodded, though she didn't immediately understand. It wasn't until she looked up at the forward compartment where Ames had the exterior view projected and saw Quell's shadow hanging there that she absorbed the significance of Nieta's words. They'd made it off the planet. They'd escaped that terrible shadow. But not all of them.
Any idea what we should expect now, Arbiter? Captain Ames asked.
None,
Oyun said. It was less than a minute later that Elith felt a subtle pulse move through her, as though someone had whispered the deep language in her ear. In the same instant, Ames let out a startled cry that sounded like a group of meaningless syllables jammed into the broken shells of two or three different, partially uttered profanities. Quell's shadow had vanished from the screen, blinked out of existence, or rather, most likely blinked into another galaxy, across some unfathomable distance, taking with it Varen and the Paragon of the First House. And though at the time she hadn't fully grasped what Varen had meant when he'd said they needed a destination and an origin, it was now painfully clear to her. He had once told her that he could sense those things to which he was deeply bonded, no matter how great the distance between them. Quell had served as the anchor point for his destination. She, of course,
had been his origin. After a brief conversation between Nieda and Doyun following Ames's outburst, no one spoke for a time. It was perhaps due to the fact that the dire nature of their situation was only now truly setting in for each of them. They had escaped Quell's shadow and all its terrors, and had together discovered a way to banish it from within the borders of the Ascendant's empire. But having done so, they now found themselves floating in deep space, aboard a tiny vessel with barely a week's worth of support. Captain Ames was the first to break the silence.
So, I don't suppose you guys have any spooky word stuff for this sort of thing?
No, Nieda answered.
Yeah, I figured you would have said something by now if you did.
Sounds like we're going to have to go with Plan B, then.
Do you have a Plan B?
Sure. We aim at Avamar, get the Arbiter to do some fancy math for a trajectory, do a full burn for a day or so, and then coast our way there.
That's a long way to coast, Captain, Nieda said. You think we can stretch supplies out until we make it?
Oh, no, we'll be long dead by then. But after everything we saw on that planet, a slow, quiet death sounds pretty good to me. And hey, at least this way maybe we'll end up getting a proper burial.
I don't understand how you can make jokes right now, Nieda said.
Has a lot to do with me being an idiot, I guess, he answered.
What about you, Arbiter? Any ideas left in that big old brain of yours?
Nothing useful, I'm afraid.
Karush?
One,
the Azirim replied.
Let's hear it.
We could preserve air by taping your mouth shut.
There it is, Ames said. Glad at least one of us remains consistent.
For the next 2 hours or so, the group alternated between brief bursts of conversation, followed by long stretches of silence. It was during one of the silent bouts that Elith caught a glimpse of something on the view screen.
What was that? She asked.
What was what?
Ames said. I thought I saw a flash, real small, upper left corner of the display.
Don't mess with me, Elith. I can't handle it right now.
Wait, Oyun said. I believe there is something there.
Ames sat up straighter, attentive, but not yet ready to hope for anything. Elith expected Oyun to target the exterior array on whatever had caused the flash, to try to get a sensor reading or something that could confirm whether or not they'd imagined it. Instead, though, he just started keying codes into the communications network.
I don't suspect that's going to do us much good, Arbiter, Ames said. At least not unless by some...
Arbiter Oyun? A woman's voice said, coming across the open channel, trembling with an obvious mix of shock, hope, and disbelief.
Arbiter, is that you?
Epilogue. 2 weeks after their rescue, Elith found herself dressed in formal attire, standing outside the command chamber of the Hezra Ka himself. Arbiter Oyun, Captain Ames, and Nieda had all preceded her, and now she and Wari Karush awaited their turns to enter the chamber to face the sovereign of the Hezra in person. Their three companions had gone in one at a time, each about half an hour apart. None of them had yet come back out. Elith glanced over at Karush for the 100th time since they'd been escorted into the antechamber and left alone. Seeing him in the high guard dress of the Aziri made her painfully self-conscious. But she couldn't help checking again to see if his uniform was really as perfect as she kept thinking it was. And every time she checked, she realized it was indeed just as perfect as she'd thought. Being neither of the Hezra nor the First House, Elith had been unable to rely on the traditional regalia reserved for such a rare and elevated audience. Arbiter Oyun had graciously called in a few favors to secure her clothing that friends and family of particularly high-ranking Hezra officials were allowed to wear. It was all black, sharply cut, but most important, not likely to draw any undue attention. Even so, the understated splendor of the high-guard dress was hard to stand next to. She smoothed her outfit, tugged at its sleeves, and reminded herself no one on the other side of those doors was going to care about what she was wearing.
No one will care about your attire, Karush said quietly.
That's easy for you to say, she answered. You look like the iron discipline of the Hezra incarnate.
It is about as comfortable as that as well.
He maintained his stance at attention, eyes forward, but the corner of his mouth that Elith could see curled up slightly, and it made her relax. She'd only seen him one other time since their return, and it was good to be with him again, even in such a high-pressure setting. Their recovery by the Clariana had turned out to be less improbable than she'd first believed. After Quell's shadow had seemed to destroy Quell, the crew of the research vessel had detected anomalies, and once it vanished, the crew had begun monitoring widely in hopes of locating it. Oyun had thought it might take the destruction of another Ascendance world to attract their notice, but as it turned out, the discharge of power that had returned the shadow to its distant origin had proved enough to alert them. Now, after having been through a short quarantine and an excruciatingly thorough debriefing, she had been summoned to appear before the Hezra Ka for reasons unknown. Elith desperately hoped he wasn't going to ask her for another account of their trials. When the doors to the chamber finally opened, the speed with which everything unfolded seemed shocking. Two envoys stepped out, and though Elith had expected that Karush would be admitted first, they were swiftly ushered in together. The command chamber was neither large nor grand, but its simple aesthetic had a rounded precision that struck Elith with as much gravity as any throne room. An elevated station dominated the rear section of the chamber, ringed by a halo of wide floating displays, and at the station sat the Hezra Ka. His back was to Elith and Karush, his attention fixed on one of the displays. They were directed by the envoys to stand in specific spots. Karush seemed to know exactly what was expected of him before anyone guided him, but he patiently followed their instructions nonetheless. Nyeda, Ames, and Oyun were nowhere to be seen, and Elith scanned the chamber for another door, but couldn't identify one. Once Elith and Karush were in place, the two envoys moved quickly off to join four others to one side of the room, where they all stood at attention. Despite all the haste, the Hezra Ka took no notice of any of them for several minutes. Based on the reactions of everyone else in the chamber, Elith guessed this was how things usually went. And though she maintained her focus and discipline, she found herself growing less impressed and intimidated by the circumstances. But when the Hezra Ka stood, any intimidation that had waned came rushing back. He had to have been over 7 feet tall, though he was built so proportionally that it was difficult for Elith to wrap her mind around just how massive he was. He had an athletic look, well-muscled in a military, functional way, and though the lines in his creased face hinted at his age, both his light movement and sharp eyes gave him a youthful energy that made it impossible to judge exactly what that age might be. To Elith's eyes, he seemed nearly the complete opposite of the Paragon, and that made him, perhaps, the perfect complement. As he stepped around from behind his station, one of the envoys spoke loudly,
"Wari Karush of the Aziri."
"Yes, thank you, I recognize my own bodyguard," the Hezra Ka said, his voice a booming baritone. "Wari Karush, good to see you."
Karush bowed, but said nothing in response.
"Still a man of few words, I see," the Hezra Ka continued. "My apologies to you both. I know it is extremely rude to keep one's guests waiting. And now I've been forced to see you together, rather than take time to address you individually, as is warranted. Unfortunately, a great many matters demand my attention of late, as you might imagine. This shouldn't take but a moment."
He turned to the Azirim and said,
"I've been reviewing all the details of the Ruhet 1117 operation, Wari Karush. Particularly,
your two personal assignments during it. On that pair of tasks, it doesn't appear that you had very great success. I've suffered the loss of my trusted envoy, Sardis. The criminal, Varen Fedic, has apparently been released to the wild. Given those facts, tell me, Azirim, do you believe it's right that you should continue to bear the title Wari?
The great man's eyes narrowed as he evaluated Kurush, and Eleth had to fight to keep herself from glancing at the Azirim to see how he'd taken that unexpected onslaught. She felt the urge to speak up, to explain, and to defend Kurush, but she knew anything she said would only make matters worse.
I believe it is right that you should judge, Hezra Ka, Kurush said,
his voice as calm and even as she'd ever heard.
Then I judge that you shall bear it no longer.
The Hezra Ka stood silent once more, a severe look on his face, and then, after several seconds, he broke into a smile, obviously amused with himself.
You truly are a man of the way, Kurush, he said. I thought for certain I could get some reaction from you with that. Inappropriate, I'm aware, but I couldn't miss the opportunity. I am serious, however, that I cannot allow you to carry the name Wari with you anymore. You now stand peerless among your storied tribe, and to allow others to bear your name strikes me as unfair.
The Hezra Ka glanced toward his line of envoys.
Envoy Ridla, we'll need to find a new title to bestow upon the Azirim if we can find one above Wari.
Yes, Hezra Ka, the envoy replied with a quick bow.
Until then, the Hezra Ka said, returning his attention to Kurush, I don't believe we can go around calling you Kurush Kurush or some such thing. For the time being, Godbreaker, I think I'll decree that you be known as Kurush, Hand of the Hezra Ka. How does that strike you?
As an honor, Hezra Ka, Kurush answered,
and Eleth detected the sound of raw emotion in his voice.
Fine, so it shall be.
The Hezra Ka turned then to look at Eleth, and the good humor left his face as he waited expectantly. Eleth, too, waited for one of the envoys to announce her, until it became clear that none of them had any intention of doing so. She didn't know what the protocol was for such a situation, but given the look on the man's face, she felt she had to say something. Hezra Ka, she said, bowing as etiquette dictated. I am Eleth, exile of the first house of...
I know who you are, he interrupted sternly, and I am offended that you would refuse to introduce yourself appropriately.
His comment threw her off. Eleth glanced quickly at Kurush to see if he could offer any clue or support, but he maintained his rigid stance.
My apologies, Hezra Ka, she said, and then tried again. I am Eleth, former advocate of the Voice. Exile, former, such titles, the Hezra Ka said, stepping toward her.
He covered the distance in three long strides and stopped 6 feet in front of her.
If the First House refuses to recognize the value of someone such as yourself, perhaps there should be a Next House.
Eleth looked up at the man, towering over her, uncertain how to read his words and of his true intent.
Yes, I know who you are, he repeated, smiling now. Young Paragon.
Every Star a Song, Ascendant Series Book 2, was written by Jay Posey and read by Laurel Lefko. Terry Hogan was the mix engineer. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Every Star a Song, Ascendant Series Book 2, is available in print from Skybound Books. Also available from Simon & Schuster Audio, Every Sky a Grave, Ascendant Series Book 1, written by Jay Posey and read by Laurel Lefko.